Good afternoon. So it's a real pleasure to be here. I'm Megan Patterson, as Elmer said, and just to kind of clarify anything, the Boston Disparities Project is now known as the Office of Health Equity and the Center of Health Equity and Social Justice. So I'm going to be sharing with you a little bit about kind of the work that we have done from a city perspective, but we've also done a lot of work very recently across New England as we begin to think about why racial and ethnic disparities in health and inequities in health are a priority for us in Boston and how important the role of leadership is in that. Actually, I'm just going to go back quickly. And then, you know, also, kind of share with you, well, after you have kind of data and leadership as a key role in that, how do you really begin to frame the issue? How do you really develop an action plan? And how do you really keep that action plan in mind and that priority in mind as you think about future policy and priority setting? So I'm going to share with you just a little bit of the data because I think it's always important to think about data as we go through this process and it also give you a little bit of a glimpse of what we look like in Boston. So in the city of Boston, the majority of our population are populations of color, and also a little over a quarter were born outside of the United States. This is probably one of my favorite data slides, and it shows kind of residential segregation. I think you could kind of see this in kind of any city across the United States, but 92% of the black population in the city of Boston lives in 7 of the 17 neighborhoods. So as you think about this picture, we move to elevated lead levels. And you can see it's concentrated in those communities. And if I were to show you, type 2 diabetes, poverty, tracks, environmental exposures, they would be socially patterned as well. Just also thinking about kind of life expectancy among black and white populations in the city of Boston, the difference between white women and black women is about 4-year difference and about 6 years between men. Infant mortality is something that I think every city has been struggling with, but what I think is so fascinating is it's probably one of the best indicators for how well we're doing as a city and as a population. And what's really interesting, I think, about some of what our data has shown is that the highest level among the white population is still higher than the lowest level of the black population. In fact, the lowest levels of the black population are right now, and they're still higher than what the white population was 25 years ago. An interesting conversation always comes up about kind of, well, is it really about access, and is it really about screening? And here's a perfect example. Actually, in the city of Boston, black women in Boston are much more likely to receive breast cancer screening, but yet you look at the mortality rates, and it's very significant. Same thing around cervical cancer screening and mortality, and the same thing applies for prostate cancer as well. So in this case, it's not really about access. Also, we've been very fortunate in the city of Boston to really begin to ask more questions about the experience of racism and discrimination on health and what that means as far as chronic stress and accumulation of stress throughout the life course. And we have the behavioral risk surveillance system that we have in the city of Boston, and we actually do an oversampling in the city of Boston, so we're able to ask additional questions. And some of those questions are about people's experiences of racism and discrimination. As you can see, blacks and Latinos report much higher rates of feeling discriminated against because of the color of their skin in both the work environment as well as when they're seeking health care. And while that kind of quantitative data is really important, there's also a lot of qualitative data that we've been able to collect just in kind of talking with folks in community coalitions who've been very active in doing some of this work. So as you can see, even there, it's validated. And it also can, go without saying, again, this conversation about is it about access. Even when access is granted or even when people have access to health care and insurance, we know that there are differences in the quality of care that is given. And these are examples of differences in kind of standard protocols depending on race and ethnicity. So that was the data that was kind of presented to our mayor by our commissioner and deputy commissioner of the Boston Public Health Commission. And, to really begin to think about what are we going to really do about this. And once he saw that about 10 years ago, he decided, Mayor Thomas Menino decided it was going to be one of his top priorities, and it has remained so for the past decade. And I won't spend too much time because you've heard from both my other colleagues here about the work that has also been done at the level of state. And I think what's particularly interesting for me when I think about the report that they published is the social context. And I think one key piece in that is they really talked about the impact of racism and structural racism on social determinants of health, which I think is pretty remarkable for a state commission to take that on. It also cannot go without saying that there was a lot of national attention. These are three reports that I think really highlighted the need to address inequity in health comprehensively. And then this is probably the most important slide as far as kind of the role of leadership, and that is among community. There were community coalitions and kind of partnerships, some formal and some informal, that were happening across the city who have been addressing these issues and really talking about these issues for even longer than a decade. So I think it's really important to highlight that leadership among the community is probably one of the most important. So kind of, I just wanted to move now into kind of how we took that data and really had a lot of leadership both at the local level of the city as well as the state, and how do we really begin to translate that need to move the needle of the data towards improved health outcomes, and thinking about how do we frame that issue, how do you create an action plan, and really how do you begin to think about that as far as ongoing policy and priority setting. So one way we really think you can get there is by integrating kind of an understood kind of framework. And so thinking about making sure that we're sharing a common language and a common understanding about what we mean when we talk about inequity in health and disparities in health and healthcare, really developing and sharing strategies and disseminating that across the region, across the city, and really making sure that there's no ownership of those things. We can really begin to learn from each other. And identifying and utilizing existing resources. And resources here are not just money, but expert faculty, partnerships, kind of thinking about likely and unlikely partnerships, I think, are absolutely key for that. And then making sure that whichever organization you're talking to or engaging in, making sure that you're engaging staff or community residents at all levels. I'm not going to spend, again, too much time with this because I think Elmer did a great job of covering this, but one thing that was very important for us to understand in moving from a disparities project to an Office of Health Equity is what we meant when we were saying disparities. And really for us, that only seemed to kind of capture differences in health outcomes. And not all differences in health outcomes are bad or unfair. So really being clear about what we meant by that and the talking about health inequities and trying to create health equity, for us really kind of captured the other social determinants of health and the social justice perspective that we really needed to keep in order to do this work effectively. So a lot of that is basically what we looked at about why were we even seeing health disparities and what were those health outcomes differences really kind of coming from, and really seeing that, number one, it was really the social and economic and environmental factors that were creating poor health outcomes. Of course, access, barriers to getting health care, and then also the differences that exist in the quality of care once you're in the environment or in the healthcare setting was absolutely crucial. But then this last bullet, I think, is very, very important, and it's the impact of both kind of the interpersonal as well as structural racism and experiences of discrimination and chronic stress and the allostatic load as we think about that throughout the life course. So thinking about the importance of taking on anti-racism work as well as cultural competency. This is the framework that we use at the Boston Public Health Commission. And as I said before, I mean, oftentimes when you think about a public health department, you spend a lot of time thinking about prevention and intervention strategies at the health outcome level. And I think as we begin to do this work, we're really trying to move the needle more towards thinking about the education, job opportunity, those other social determinants of health, which are absolutely crucial. But for us, we really have to recognize at the commission that the impact of structural racism having an independent effect on the other social determinants of health, I think, is absolutely important. And I think two are one key one, I think, is thinking about socioeconomic status, which is just a snapshot of how people are doing right now. But when you think about socioeconomic wealth and the opportunity to own, it makes a big impact on kind of where people are today. So all of that sounds, fantastic when you think about kind of how do you frame this issue, but I think this is where the challenge really lies. Oftentimes a public health department, this is kind of your tips for staying healthy. Don't smoke. If you do, stop. Kind of drink in moderation, practice safe sex, drive defensively, manage your stress, and maintain social ties. So all of those things, I think, we can all agree are very, very important. But as you begin to adopt a health equity framework and begin to think about how the social determinants of health are key to health outcomes, it becomes a little bit more challenging. And this becomes a little bit more, yeah, our friends at the CDC. This becomes a little bit more of what the conversation looks like. And this is very real. And this is, I think, where the challenge really lies for all of us, whether you're a public health department, a school, a healthcare setting, a housing department or a transportation department. But this is really where the kind of challenge lies and what we have to really do to really think about adopting a social determinant of health framework. So for us, in order to really do that, we really thought a multi-level approach was absolutely necessary, and that included data collection, making sure community was at the table, keeping disparities in health and inequity in health as a central issue and as a core public health function, thinking about the upstream activities around policy, as well as kind of literally putting where our money met, where our mouth was, and making sure that we're funding these efforts and funding them comprehensively. So these three reports, which I think Elmer had mentioned before, were kind of our action plan for addressing disparities in health, and they're on our website. And the data report that's on your far right is some of the data that I presented earlier is actually included in that report. But these three reports really came out of a charge from the mayor. He created two task forces, a mayor's working task force as well as a hospital working group. And all three reports were published at the same time in 2005. And I just want to just quickly highlight that the mayor's task force blueprint had members from kind of health and human services, business, academia, community coalitions, so folks from, you know, kind of across many industries. And they really came together to come up with what is going to be our action plan for addressing disparities in health in the city. And so it included both kind of health care as well as public health functions and thinking about, and I think this is probably the most important piece, the environmental and the societal action plans that we can really be thinking about as we move this work forward. The other was the hospital working group report, and this task force included kind of key personnel from hospitals and community health centers across the city, and they really came up with five core recommendations for what clinical settings can do to be agents of positive change as we think about addressing healthcare inequities. So it's collecting race, ethnicity, language, and education comprehensively, using that data to measure your disparities in healthcare, and thinking about how do you link that to your quality improvement strategies, having diversifying the healthcare workforce as central to that, improving cultural competency, and also making sure that community is at the table as we think about making decisions around healthcare. So, as I said before, our big issue with this was making sure that these weren't reports that just sat on the shelf, but in fact that we actually, you know, put our money where our mouth was and also really thought about what these look like on the ground. So over the past 2.5 years, we've invested about $2 million in 54 community organizations that are also health institutions and small non-for-profits and grassroots organizations. And these were the key areas that they worked in. I think a perfect example of how kind of downstream work that's going on, piloting programs, can really turn into a policy change is the work that some of the hospitals and health centers did around collecting comprehensive race, ethnicity, language, and education data. And this includes, we were able from that work to really pass a data collection regulation in June of 2006 that would require all hospitals and health centers to do this. The other thing that we've kind of really adopted now is thinking about kind of our role as a funder. So as Elmer mentioned, the Boston Public Health Commission was designated as a center of excellence in elimination of disparities. Also, the Greater Lawrence Family Health Center, which is in Lawrence, Massachusetts, was also designated. We all had grantees. We had 17 grantees between Boston and across New England. And we really decided that if we were going to talk about building a learning community and really sharing these best practices, we needed to kind of formalize that relationship. And so we created a New England Partnership for Health Equity. So they'll be doing work over the next 3 years, and this is just where they're located. You know, and kind of central to that is kind of our goals of this partnership, and I apologize for the it's kind of going off the page there, but really being catalysts for change and really kind of creating institutional and community changes in policies, programs, and practices, developing sustainable work, and really making sure that that's rooted in the community. So essential to that, you know, as I said before, is really creating a learning community and also being clear about what we mean about training and technical assistance and taking that training to that next level about developing an action plan and also making sure that we all have this understanding about the frameworks that are necessary for building health equity. These were some of the, I'm not going to spend much time here because these were some of the, you know, wonderful, I think, policy and advocacy efforts that we've done. We'll continue to be a strong member of the Disparities Action Network, but it's really important that no matter what your work is, that you're really connecting it to these upstream policy level priorities. And so finally, I just want to kind of summarize some of the challenges in doing this type of work. And again, I had mentioned it before, it's sometimes you receive funding to do this work, and it's, you know, kind of short-term funding. We really have to understand that this is long-term work. So as we receive that funding, we have to have that understanding. But if you're also a funder, you need to be clear about how you're doing that funding. And that was one thing we did. We had funded 12 months grants. Now they're 3 years. They include technical assistance and training. So we really need to be thinking about that as we go forward. Really building sustainable change is absolutely, I think, essential. Increasing public awareness around these efforts and really continuing the conversation. Having an understanding that it takes time really to develop community coalitions, to develop partnerships in the community. And I think, you know, kind of to continue on with that, coordinating our work with the partner and how we like to define community and kind of moving away from this you versus us conversation and really thinking more comprehensively about a we conversation. I think discussing race, all levels of racism and discrimination as root causes of inequity in health is absolutely central to doing this work. And as I had mentioned before, it's kind of defining this evolving role of a public health department. There's a great quote by Dr. David Williams at the end of the Place Matters episode of Unnatural Causes, when he really begins to say that kind of all policy is health policy. And is when you think about public safety, public education, housing, neighborhood investment, violence intervention, policies have tremendous impacts on our health. So we really need to be thinking about them as public health policies. And then finally, I think some things to consider is that while these are all kind of clear challenges and difficult challenges, they also provide kind of unique opportunities. So as we think about the evolving role of public health departments, in thinking about a broad stakeholder analysis about which table are we sitting at and who do we need to invite to the table, one thing I would challenge folks in saying is we oftentimes say, who do we have to invite to our party? But I think sometimes you have to crash a party, and you have to be willing to kind of be the unusual suspect at a different meeting, whether it's a housing meeting, a transportation meeting, an economic meeting, and really, you know, be clear about your role. And then I think absolutely residents and community-based coalitions must be included in public health, scientific, or other agendas, both at the local and national level. And these are just kind of four principles that we live by around sustainability: making sure that you're institutionalizing the changes you're making, that they're connected to policy so both upstream and downstream are working together, that community ownership and capacity building is real, and really finding the resources and making that commitment to sustain those efforts. Thank you.